Welcome to Poets and Philosophers. This is episode 5 in our ongoing series. We are going to start off with the first reading from Hashishin, End of Law, then Neil Gaiman's The Day the Saucers Came, Ira Cohen following up with This Is Real Timing, then Kate Tempest, Keep Moving, Don't Move, and ending up with, for this section, Jack Kerouac reads from On the Road.
It is no more than 2 steps to the door of the friend. You are stopping with the first step.
This is one of my favorite of my poems, and I'm reading it to you. It's called The Day the Saucers Came. That day, the saucers landed. Hundreds of them, golden, silent, coming down from the sky like great snowflakes. And the people of Earth stood and stared as they descended, waiting, dry-mouthed, to find what waited inside for us. And none of us knowing if we would be here tomorrow. But you didn't notice it, because that day, the day the saucers came, by some coincidence, was the day that the graves gave up their dead, and the zombies pushed up through soft earth, or erupted, shambling and dull-eyed, unstoppable, came towards us, the living, and we screamed and ran. But you did not notice this, because on the Saucer Day, which was the zombie day, it was Ragnarok also. And the television screens showed us a ship built of dead men's nails, a serpent, a wolf, all bigger than the mind could hold, and the cameraman could not get far enough away, and then the gods came out. But you did not see them coming, because on the Saucer Zombie Battling Gods Day, the floodgates broke, and each of us was engulfed by genies and sprites, offering us wishes and wonders and eternities and charm and cleverness and true brave hearts and pots of gold, while giants fifo-fummed across the land and killer bees. But you had no idea of any of this, because that day, the Saucer Day, the Zombie Day, the Ragnarok and Fairies Day, the day the great winds came and snows and the cities turned to crystal, the day all plants died, plastics dissolved, the day the computers turned the screens telling us we would obey, the day angels, drunk and muddled, stumbled from a bars, and all the bells of London were sounded, the day animals spoke to us in Assyrian, the Yeti Day, the fluttering capes and arrival of the time machine day. You didn't notice any of this, because you were sitting in your room, not doing anything, not even reading, not really. Just looking at your telephone, wondering if I was going to call.
Oi, bom dia. Vamos ensinar como é que troca o reparo da válvula Plus Slim. Da Deca. Me deu muito.
This is real timing. 1 second before the planet blows up, I find the words to speak to you. The less light, the more beautiful the mask. Through our fingers, the mask maker takes and gives back our faces. The bandages fall off. We leave our traces. I was balanced in the foundry and wanted to be made. I was found in the balance and made wanting. I have been bound to the valence and wanting weighed. In the time of change, we will become even more strange.
Склоняем власть придержащих к вступлению в новую мировую партию. Радио «Обряды свободной земли».
Close the curtains, light the incense, inhale the thick clouds with your eyes closed, your nose burns on your knees in the corner of a strange woman's room, her naked feet like tree roots in this undergrowth. Frankincense, Frankenstein, Frankophile, Philistine. Frankly, we are killing time. Wake it, bring it back to life. Kneel, bathe in warm water. Your body's dirt turns the bathtub as grey as these walls. Notice, bathe at moonrise and sunrise. And when you switch off the telly, wrap your head in clean towels. Curl up like a found thing, a dead insect collected between the pages of an old book written in a language you can't read. Now dry the inside of your elbows in painstaking ritual. Three times clockwise, three times anti-clockwise. Don't breathe in until there's no air left in your lungs. Keep moving. Don't move. Keep moving. Don't move. 7.2 billion humans. 7.3 billion humans. 7.4 billion humans. The rain falls like troops, the rain falls. Open your coat in it, shiver and cough. Your skin's like a dead thing, dying. Your feet like pondweed, the rain falls like troops. Walk up the hill, post-pub trudge, laugh to it, live to it. It's coming to pass, my country's coming apart. The whole thing's becoming such a bumbling. Open the front door, your key is an arrow. Now turn three times in the hallway. Peel off your clothes. Socks last. Socks last. Stand naked and push your twig fingers through the wet bracken that storms by your ears. Stand naked and shiver. Now dress in warm things that smell of your body. Lie in a cross on the rug, watched by the dog. Let his mild concern be comforting as you stare at the bottom of the chair. Drink rum from a curved glass that you stole from a place that you hated. Eat raw food standing up at the fridge. Stroke the phone screen with your thumb like a mother trying to wipe clean the face of her only child. That blemish, that black dot that will not come clean. The first sign of the plague. Absorb the ache of all your friends. And sleep with the light in your brain burning UV all night. Wake tired, eat bread, eat oranges, eat bus stops, eat traffic jams, eat shoes, eat shop windows, eat the chair you're sitting on, eat the paperwork, eat the table, eat the idea there was ever more than this. Eat the beer, eat the takeaway, eat the toothbrush, eat the boredom, eat the breakup, eat the phone she hasn't called, eat her ringtone six times, six times, and when she answers, eat the silence in your mouth. Eat the pillow, eat the blankets, eat the moon, eat the screaming drunks, eat the bad dreams, wake up, eat the alarm. Remember to chew. Are you doing this too? 7.4 billion human. 7.5 billion human. 7.6 billion humans. Open your arms and their legs and your teeth and their genes and your ribs and their eyes and your skin and their brain. And push two lonelinesses together and create more loneliness. Or create God and come inside each other. Walk through the city alone in a stupor of love. Create God. Touch everything. Nod at strangers like a daffodil with a severed head. Your face is a trumpet. Blow the futile brass part. Sit across your lover's lap and scream into their mouth. Where's love? Create God, but where's love? The last real pub in the south is surrounded by wankers and they're coming in close with their cards out. So let's link arms. Be prepared to go down with your ship. Your ship's sunk. Be prepared to go down. Stick your hands out of the car on the motorway. Feel the wind pushing its face into your open palms. Keep moving. Don't move. Keep moving. Don't move. Keep moving.
Anyway, I wrote the book because we're all gonna die. In the loneliness of my life, my father dead, my brother dead, my mother far away, my sister and my wife far away. Nothing here but my own tragic hands that once were guarded by a world, a sweet attention, that now are left to guide and disappear their own way into the common dark of all our deaths. Sleeping in me raw, bed alone and stupid, with just this one pride and consolation. My heart broke in a general despair and opened up inwards to the Lord. I made a supplication in this dream. So in the last page of On the Road, I describe how the hero, Dean Moriarty's come to see me all the way from the West Coast just for a day or two. We've just been back and forth across the country several times in cars, and now our adventures are over. We're still great friends, but we have to go into later phases of our lives. So there he goes, Dean Moriarty, ragged in the moth-eaten overcoat he brought specially for the freezing temperatures of the East. Walking off alone, and last I saw of him, he rounded the corner of 7th Avenue, eyes on the street ahead, and bent to it again. Gone. So, in America, when the sun goes down, and I sit on the old broken-down river pier watching the long, long skies over New Jersey, and sense all that raw land that rolls in one unbelievable huge bulge over to the West Coast, and all that road going, and all the people dreaming in the immensity of it, in an hour, I know by now that children must be crying in the land where they let the children cry. And tonight the stars will be out. And don't you know that God is Pooh Bear? The evening star must be drooping and shedding her sparkler dims on the prairie, which is just before the coming of complete night that blesses the earth, darkens all the rivers, cups the peaks, and folds the final shore in. Nobody knows what's going to happen to anybody besides the forlorn rags of growing old. Think of Dean Moriarty. I even think of old Dean Moriarty, the father we never found. Think of Dean Moriarty. I think of Dean Moriarty.
Up next is Jim Morrison, An American Prayer, followed by Christina Rossetti, Remember, Hakim Bey and Bill Laswell's Marco Polo's Tale, Lord Buckley with Willie the Shake.
Do you know the warm progress under the stars? Do you know we exist? Have you forgotten the keys to the kingdom? Have you been born yet, and are you alive? Let's reinvent the gods, all the myths of the ages. Celebrate symbols from deep elder forests. Have you forgotten the lessons of the ancient war? We need great golden copulations. Fathers are cackling in trees of the forest. Our mother is dead in the sea. You know we are being led to slaughters by placid admirals, and that fat, slow generals are getting obscene on young blood. You know we are ruled by TV. The moon is a dry blood beast. Guerrilla bands are rolling numbers in the next block of green vine, amassing for warfare on innocent herdsmen who are just dying. Oh, great creator of being, grant us one more hour to perform our art and perfect our lives. The moths and atheists are doubly divine and dying. We live, we die, and death not ends it. Journey we more into the nightmare, cling to life, our passion flower, cling to cunts and cocks of despair. We got our final vision by clap, Columbus's groin got filled with green death. I touched her thigh and death smiled. We have assembled inside this ancient and insane theater to propagate our lust for life and flee the swarming wisdom of the streets. The barns are stormed, the windows kept, and only one of all the rest to dance and save us with the divine mockery of words. Music inflames temperament. True kings, murderers, are allowed to roam free. A thousand magicians arise in the land. Where are the feasts we were promised? Where is the wine, the new wine, dying on the vine? Resident mockery, give us an hour for magic. We of the purple glove, we of the starling flight and velvet hour. We of Arabic pleasure's breed, we of sundom in the night. Give us a creed to believe, a night of lust. Give us trust in the night. Give of color 100 hues, a rich mandala for me and you. And for your silky pillowed house, a head, wisdom, and a bed. Troubled decree, resolute mockery has claimed thee. We used to believe in the good old days. We still receive in little ways the things of kindness and unsporting brow, forget and allow. Did you know freedom exists in a school book? Did you know madmen are running our prison within a jail, within a gale, within a white free Protestant maelstrom? We're perched headlong in the edge of boredom. We're reaching for death and the end of a candle. We're trying for something that's already found us. Wow, I'm sick of doubt. Live in the light of certain south cruel bindings. The servants have the power. Dog men and their mean women. pulling poor blankets over our sailors. I'm sick of dour faces staring at me from the TV tower. I want roses in my garden bower, dig. Royal babies, rubies, must now replace aborted strangers in the mud. These mutants, blood meal for the plant that's plow. They are waiting to take us into the severed garden. You know how pale and wanton thrillful comes death in a strange hour, unannounced, unplanned for, like a scaring, over-friendly guest you've brought to bed. Death makes angels of us all and gives us wings where we had shoulders smooth as raven's claws. No more money, no more fancy dress. This other kingdom seems by far the best, until its other jaw reveals incest and loose obedience to a vegetable law. I will not go. Prefer a feast of friends to the giant family.
Remember me when I am gone away, gone far away into the silent land, where you can no more hold me by the hand, nor I half turn to go, yet turning stay. Remember me when no more, day by day, you tell me of our future that you'd planned. Only remember me, you understand. It will be late to counsel then or pray. Yet, if you should forget me for a while, and afterwards remember, do not grieve. For if the darkness and corruption leave a vestige of the thoughts that once I had, better by far you should forget and smile than that you should remember and be sad.
This prince was called Alauddin and was Mohammedan. He had created, in a lovely valley enclosed between two very high mountains, a very beautiful garden, full of every variety of fruit and trees that could be obtained. And around these plantations, various palaces and pavilions decorated with golden ornaments, paintings and furniture all made of silk. He had brought young girls of perfect beauty and full of charm to live here, and they were trained to sing, to play all sorts of instruments, to dance, and above all, to make the most seductive advances to men that can be imagined. This is the reason why the old man had this place built. Muhammad, having said that those who obeyed his will would go to paradise, where they would find all the pleasures and delights of the world, beautiful women and rivers of milk and honey, this man wanted to pretend that he could make anyone he wished enter this very paradise. No one could penetrate into the garden we described, for they had built at the entrance to the valley a very fortified and impregnable castle. It could only be entered by a secret road.
Well, if we may try this interpretation, perhaps first the traditional Mark Antony's address over the corpse of Caesar. How then would Lord Buckley interpret this in the vernacular of our day?
Hipsters, flipsters, and finger-puffing daddies, knock me your lobes. I came here to lay Caesar out, not to hip you to him. The bad jazz that a cat blows wails long after he's cut out. The groovy is often stashed with their frames, so don't put Caesar down. The swinging Brutus hath laid a story anew that Caesar was hooked for power. If it was so, it was a sad drag, and sadly hath the Caesar cat answered it. Here, with a pass from Brutus and the other brass, for Brutus is a worthy stud. Yea, so are they all worthy studs. I came to wail at Caesar's wake. He was my buddy cat, and he leveled with me. Yet Brutus digs that he had eyes for power, and Brutus is a solid cat. It is true that he hath returned with many freaks in chains and brought them home to Rome. Yea, the looty was booty and hipped the treasury well. Dost thou dig that this was Caesar's groove for the push? When the cats with the empty kicks hath copped out, yea, Caesar hath copped out too, and cried of a storm. To be a world grabber, a stiffer riff must be blown. Without bread, a stud can't even rule an anthill. Yet Brutus was swinging for the moon, and yea, Brutus is a worthy stud. And all you cats were gassed on the Lupercal when he came on like a king freak. 3 times I laid the kingly wig on him, and thrice did he put it down. Was this the move of a greedy hipster? Yet Brutus said he dug the lick, and yea, a hippocat hath never blown.
Well, certainly the eloquence of Willie the Shake here is matched by that of Lord Buckley.
You know why they call him Willie the Shake?
Why?
Because he shook everybody. They gave that cat 5 cents for the paper and a nickel's worth of ink. He sat down and wrote up such a breeze. When he got through, everybody got off. He was too tight a cat. And you remember when Mark and Clea were swanging on that velvet-covered barge, understand, out there on the Nile, and the moon was shining down, and all that crazy Egyptian incense was jumping, and Mark and Clea was swinging up a storm. In the meantime, Caesar had split to Rome, like I explained to you before, and gotten that hassle, and they sliced that polecat up every which way. Well, that was Mark's buddy cat, you see. Now, Mark is a hip cat. He knows that every fox has got his box. But the only thing what was dragging him, they were bad rapping Caesar, you see. Mark didn't dig that. He had to put down Cleo, which he didn't want to do, because Cleo was one of them early-day Elizabeth Taylor chicks, you know what I mean? But he had to put it down and go defend Mark, like we just laid the issue.
So this, then, it makes it wholly, wholly comprehensible.
Indeed, Your Grace.
Fully understood. I think that the audience listening, half of it is watching Lord Buckley in action, too, for you have the mark of an old-time, as you were telling this, you remember an old-time Shakespearean actor.
And now, a poem by Diane de Prima, Ave, and a talk from James Fadiman, The Remarkable Results of Microdosing.
This is a poem called Ave. Ave, like an Ave Maria. It's kind of a poem to all the street women in the world. Sense of myself as stray woman with baby wandering over globe, kind of poem. Oh, lost moon sisters, crescent in hair, sea underfoot, do you wander? In blue veil, in green leaf, in tattered shawl, do you wander? With gold leaf skin, with flaming hair, do you wander? On Avenue A, on Bleecker Street, do you wander? On Rampart Street, on Fillmore Street, do you wander? With flower wreath, with jeweled breath, do you wander? Footprints shining, mother of pearl, behind you. Moonstone eyes, in which the crescent moon. with gloves, with hat, in rags, in fur, in beads, under the waning moon, hair streaming in black rain, wailing with stray dogs, hissing in doorways, shadows you are that fall on the crossroads, highways. Jaywalking, do you wander? Spitting, do you wander? Mumbling and crying, do you wander? Aged and talking to yourselves. With roving eyes, do you wander? Hot for quick love, do you wander? Weeping, you're dead. Naked, you walk. Swathed in long robes, you walk. Swaddled in death shroud, you walk. Backwards, you walk. Hungry, hungry, hungry. Shrieking, I hear you. Cursing, I hear you. Praying, I hear you. You lie with the unicorn. You lie with the cobra. You lie in the dry grass. You lie with the yeti. You flick long cocks of satyrs with your tongue. You are armed. You drive chariots. You tower above me. You are small. You cower on hillsides, out of the winds. Pregnant, you wander. Barefoot, you wander. Battered by drunk men, you wander. You kill on steel tables. You birth in black beds. Fetus you tore out stiffens in snow. It rises like new moon. You moan in your sleep. Digging for yams, you wander. Looking for dope, you wander. Playing with birds, you wander. Chipping at stone, you wander. Long night, seeking you. I climb the sea crest, seeking you. I lie on the prairie, batter at stone gates, calling your names. You are coral. You are lapis and turquoise. Your brain curls like shell. You dance on hills. Hard substance woman, you whirl. You dance on subways. You sprawl in tenements. Children lick at your tits. You are the hills, the shape and color of mesa. You are the tent, the lodge of skins, the hogan, the buffalo robes, the quilt, the knitted afghan. You are the cauldron and the evening star. You rise over the sea. You ride the dark. I move within you, light the evening fire. I dip my hand in you and eat your flesh. You are my mirror image and my sister. You disappear like smoke on misty hills. You lead me through dream forest on horseback. Large gypsy mother, I lean my head on your back. I am you, and I must become you. I have been you, and I must become you. I am always you. I must become you. Aya, aya, ah, aya, aya, ah, ah. Mayama, mayama, om, star mother, ma, om, mayama.
Though there is something I call citizen science, which is the thousands and thousands of people who have talked to each other and helped each other, as well as the mushroom companies who write me thank you notes for all the kits they're selling. So a microdose of a psychedelic, and I'll just use the term microdose from here on, is a tenth to a twentieth of the amount one would take if one were having a recreational dose. If one's talking about a transformational dose, we're really dealing with much higher numbers. But we're talking approximately 10 micrograms of LSD, between a tenth of a gram and a four-tenths of a gram of mushrooms, and you can take it from there. The discovery, and like everything else, when you deal with the natural world and with the plant world, it's always rediscovery by ignorant white people. That's our system. But for me, the discovery was Robert Fort told me that Albert Hoffman had told him about a low dose. And I thought that was interesting. My entire career has been with relatively high doses. You know, if it isn't transcendence and you don't vanish as a being and you're not one with all things, I'm not that interested. So what does the universe do for me? It says, why don't you look at the absolute other end, at the most boring use of psychedelics ever created. No mystical visions, no snakes eating you alive, no angelic being saying, you're really special. And everyone else is too, but you can't hear that. So microdosing, it turns out, makes you feel better. And as Eilert's great book says, it's called a really good day. And those of you who have not microdosed have had really good days, so you know what I'm talking about. Now, the first question was, why does this little teeny bit have any effect at all? And one of the nice things is there's research. And there's a lot of research on very low and micro doses. There's a book coming out in a couple of weeks called The Science of Microdosing. And the research is all very clear, is there are no effects below 25 mics. Now, the problem with all that research is that they were looking only for what we would call classic psychedelic effects. So they missed everything else. But being good scientists, they said there are no effects, rather than here are the things we looked for and there weren't those. Would have been a little more correct. The other problem, the other question was, given how amazing microdosing is, and I'll go into it in a little bit, why hadn't we been noticing, at least for the past 50 years? Because remember, most LSD work in the world comes in two phases. One, up till the government stopped it, and it was the most researched psychiatric drug on the planet, several thousand research papers, then there was the period of enormous use, which is, at least in the United States, since it became illegal, 26 million Americans have tried LSD. And that figure goes up 400,000 to 600,000 each year, no matter what's going on in the drug world. But nobody was paying attention to microdoses. Well, curiously, I was going back to what Sandoz had done, because in the good old days, you wrote Sandoz and they sent you some LSD and said, tell us how you're using it. And the government, if you were doing it that way, gave you an exemption to do that and you were on your way. Sandoz only provided LSD in ampules, that's a little bit of glass with a little bit of liquid, 25 mics, or tablets, 25 mics. No one ever considered that there was anything else below that. Well, there is. And in fact, there's a lovely thing which you might just think about with other pharmaceuticals you may have been given. Albert Hoffman said on the package, when Sandoz sent it out, it said, before you give this to anyone else, you must use it yourself. Now that's packaging. But of course, what happened in many cases is you use it yourself and you said, why am I going to give this, right, to a bunch of overweight sophomores to see if their blood sugar changes? Now, the nice thing about microdosing is it's been used for thousands of years by indigenous people. And I was brought, this was brought home to me in a very somewhat embarrassing way. I was feeling Jim the Explorer had discovered this new way and was promulgating it fairly wildly. And an anthropologist said to me, did it ever occur to you that indigenous people might have tried small doses. Given that they've tried every other level of dose. And I said, until you mentioned it. And then when you begin to look really carefully at some, even of the anthropologists, they have a little throwaway line. There's a 1977 article about the Huichol in National Geographic. And it says they consider peyote a major sacrament, and they use it to make it easier to have long, hot walks, to have visions and to see their gods. And I thought, well, those are dosage levels. Because some of you may know that if you took a fairly large dose of LSD or peyote, you would not take a long, hot walk. You might lie in the sun and hope that your eyeballs don't get burned out. So low doses are out there. And obviously in any hunting and gathering society, South America, hunters really do a lot better with something that increases stamina, increases visual acuity, and increases the willingness to focus very, very carefully for long amounts of time. So it's an obvious use. But what happened is I started asking people, would you be interested in trying this very low dose? And like some of you, I have a lot of friends who said, oh, sure, man. That's cool, yeah. I haven't tried that. How about next week? I'm kind of stoned this weekend with something higher. So I began to get reports. And the first reports were, yes, there were effects. And that was, at that moment, rather exciting. Then I kept asking people, and then people would ask people, and then people who didn't know me would ask people, and I began to get reports from other countries and from people I wouldn't normally meet. And I began to compile the lists of things they said it helped. And it began to get very puzzling. And let me read you a list. And this was, most of this is from 2015. This is things that were improved by the use of 10 micrograms or slightly less every third day. The kind of protocol I suggested for exploration, and for exploration only, was one day on and 2 days off. By the way, that's become, and I read about it, the Fadiman protocol, in which your entire life is now committed to that schedule. I only asked people to do it for a month and said, do what you want after that and let me know. And it turns out, after a month, most of the people in our sample, and we're talking thousands, do it less often. So turns out its major addictive properties are vastly overblown. So what does it help? Anxiety? Not general anxiety, not if you're just anxious, but academic anxiety, party anxiety, social anxiety, Asperger's, more ease in social situations. And people who are kind of serious, because most Asperger's people are fairly serious and also like to keep really good records, they tend to want to take more than that for the same effect that for the rest of us 10 is enough. Bipolar, mood elevation during the depression, which is most people, we recommend not doing something during your manic phase, and usually you're perfectly happy not to. My favorite in the early ones was no post-Burning Man crash. And as this young woman wrote, a first. Creativity, this is technical creativity, coding, machine design, a lot of others. Recently, we've been looking at concussions. And maybe we'll have time to get back to that, but if not, we'll take it in the question time. But concussions turn out to often are alleviated in many ways with microdosing. And that's something I want to really do a study on. People stopped using or decreased their use of coffee, cigarettes, Adderall, a lot of antidepressants. And what people now write in, they say, oh, I want to, I'm on this horrible pharmaceutical, I want a microdose. I write back, the word is taper. The word withdrawal, by the way, does not appear in the pharmaceutical literature. But how you get off something is to take less and less and less of it, because most of the antidepressants are incredibly addictive, as some of you unfortunately know. Ice pick headaches. That's a headache where it feels like there's an ice pick going into your eye. They take about 1 minute, but they can be alleviated in a couple of seconds with a microdose. The long version of that is called a cluster headache. Usually that takes a much higher dose of psychedelics, but a number of people have reported that microdosing solved their clusters as well, and we'd like to look at that. One of the things that you look for when you're getting these reports is changes that nobody asked for, because those are really interesting. In general, when people are microdosing, they improve their health habits. Food choices, exercise, yoga, meditation. Early on, a wonderful guy who used to write about 2,500 words a day to me, I know a lot about him, and his children and his ex-wife and so on. But he was a junk food kind of guy when he wasn't smoking dope. And he said, I looked at the menu, and by God, I wanted the salad. So what I want you to get out of that is these changes in habits are not by willpower. They seem to occur as an effect. There are no, by the way, there are no side effects. They're only effects of things. Learning, languages, advanced math. A lot of people said I was much better able to focus in class. Even my lousy teachers got interesting. And a couple of people have said I was able to look at the PowerPoint once and then just make notes. I didn't have to keep going back and forth. And people basically talked about better grades and easier exams and so forth. One of the ones that was wonderful, because there's, you just don't think psychedelics, menstrual periods. Troubling emotional or physical PMS. A lot of people are reporting improvements to the extent of from horrible to normal. And we have a little sub-study going on that. Physical skills, musical instruments, drumming, composition, flying a plane, driving. Trauma, this is not going to eliminate trauma, but it seems to decrease the triggering. And one of the ones that is peculiar was much less procrastination. And when I looked at this, I thought, that's really cool. But then I thought, oh my God, what if the pharmaceutical industry sees this and decides that procrastination is a disease? They'll be out there. A few people improved in stuttering. Writer's block. A lot of journalists who've done articles on microdosing indicate that it's great for first drafts. And there are two groups of journalists. Ones who would write, I microdosed for a month and then I talked to this guy. The others were, I talked to this guy and then afterwards, I wrote him that I was microdosing. And people basically have improved work. Amount, discrimination, flow, quality. They also indicate that they are more comfortable with those awful people at work. They're also, I have a couple of notes that say, boy, if people knew that what it did for your libido, you would have a product. We haven't seen that as a generalization, but you're welcome to check it out. So what happened with this research is we started reporting it. We reported at MAPS, reported in Prague and England, Berlin, and most recently, a few weeks ago at Horizon. And what happened at the same time was what you might call a media feeding frenzy, which is there was one article and then there were eight articles that either quoted it or just stole it. And then there was just an endless round of articles until every magazine had to have had their microdosing article. And each article, of course, led to more people trying it. And more people trying it would write to our site, microdosingpsychedelics.com. That's with a plural, psychedelics. And they would sign in for information and join our study. And the study was, take it for a month, every couple of days. And since we were now doing a more formal study, tell us about your emotional states for the prior month. Tell us why you want to microdose. And then, of course, we can see from your numbers what happens. And what happens in general is that, and we used a very standard instrument called PANAS. It's positive and negative affect states. And we picked a very general, well-known instrument so people wouldn't say, why didn't you use a general, well-known instrument? It's not that great. But what it basically said is when people are microdosing, their positive emotions go up and their negative emotions decline. Now, antidepressants, for the few of you they work for, have a partial similar effect. They tend to make negative emotions go down, which is you are much better able to stand being unhappy. Microdoses work differently, which is you not only are less unhappy, but you're more happy. And that's remarkable. And as the media frenzy continued, and it continues to this day, right now, there's a little subunit on Reddit of 20,000 people talking to each other about microdoses. If you go to the YouTube, the highest single and not bad how to microdose has 600,000 hits. There's a group called the Third Wave, that's one word, thirdwave.com, who give classes on how to microdose and are generally setting up kind of friendship units, kind of like psychedelic societies around. There's also a lovely guy in England who sells you a microdose kit. In case you don't know how to measure 10 micrograms, he also includes sterile gloves. And I think it's in even a little wooden box. It's really quite lovely. Well, and because of this huge interest, and our sample is from 59 countries. So when I say one of the things I've learned is psychedelics are available worldwide. What's my time? Okay. I got to tell you just one story then. I got a letter from Namibia. Okay, everyone who knows they could immediately go to a map and put their finger on Namibia, don't raise your hands, you'll embarrass the people around you. He had had, again, those of you who know psychedelics, he had had shingles. Shingles, if you don't take care of them, for some people, it's basically pain. It's pain, pain, pain. This was his third month. He was no longer pretty much sleeping. I mean, it was terrible. He'd done all the things you can do if you start too late. He'd never had any psychedelic experience, and he said, but I had a friend in the capital who had some mushrooms, and I just thought it might be a good idea. So this is why I think, you know, divine plays with us. 45 minutes later, he was out of pain. That's what I said. Woo. And I was so excited. I wrote him back and other things. I was so excited because I wanted to tell my colleague, Sophia, who was presenting in Prague. And when she got back to the States, I called her and, you know, I'm going to tell you this terrific story. And I said, da-da-da-da-da, shingles. She said, you know, in Prague, two women came up to me, hugged me and wept. And I said, yeah. She said, shingles. Now, those of you who are into neuroanatomy and brain chemistry and all the things that have not actually proved very useful yet. But you get those great pictures. You can figure out why 10 micrograms of LSD can help shingles. And I'll give you one more, even geekier one. This is a negative. This is people who shouldn't microdose. People with red-green color blindness. Some of you may know what a tracer is. Those of you that don't, when you take a regular psychedelic, you see a light source and you move your eye away and there's a little thin line of light that follows you. It's a tracer. People with red-green blindness, with color blindness, with microdosing, have those tracers for days. Because we had a few of them in our study and they all dropped out, and Sophia wrote them and said, "Why'd you drop out?" And they said, "Tracers." And Sophia, being a real scientist, she said, "Let me talk to you, Jim, in a couple of days." So in a couple of days, she said, "I had a friend who has red-green blindness." "Yes, it's true." She called him, "Would you please microdose?" "Yes, there are tracers." What we're doing now, so it's out there. We've explored the island. The event space of microdosing has come into being. It's like exploring a tropical island. There's just all kinds of things in it that we don't understand, but they're there. The next thing that happens after, first there's the people who say, "I don't believe anything, actually even the sunrise, unless there's a double-blind study." And they always, at the end of an article, someone says, "Well, there hasn't been a double-blind study. How do we know that all these thousands of people, it isn't just a placebo?" One of our many subjects wrote in and said, "I don't care if it's a placebo. I haven't felt this good in 20 years. And I just loved them to do the one on shingles and see if there's a placebo." But anyway, that's... what's happening is there are 12 countries in which the usual correct double-blind cross blah, blah, blah studies are starting. Canada, New Zealand, maybe even the USA. It's a little harder because it's costly if you have to keep watching people. And in the U.S., as someone said, it's very hard to talk to our university and say, "We'd like to give people a Schedule I drug every couple of days and just let them go home." And the university says, "If I say no, what's it going to cost me? If I say yes, what could it cost me?" So anyway, 12 other countries are working on it. And we were about to go out of business. And then we thought, what could we do that nobody else can do? Well, we have thousands of people who have microdosed, and we have enough of their information. And they've microdosed up to maybe a year and a half ago. But we only asked them to tell us for a month, and many of them didn't tell us that long. So we are asking approximately 8,000 people to tell us what were the long-term effects for you if you microdosed, if you stopped, how often you do it, what's going on now. Because we're the only group that can really do that because we have this huge base to start from. And that will actually be better data than is available for most pharmaceuticals. Little dirty secret. Most pharmaceutical research does not go beyond 6 months. That which you have been taking for 15 years, no data. So we're trying to move things along because it is available. As someone pointed out, mushrooms do not know they're illegal. And that's probably what we're going to stop with because... there's so many people now that want to do the research, and they're in positions to do so. And the first group did a beautiful little study in Amsterdam. There was a meeting of a psychedelic society, and the researchers said, "Would you mind if we made this a research evening? Everybody gets a little bit of truffle." Psychedelic truffle is actually, it's a mushroom that just grows underground. And for peculiar reasons, it's legal, more legal than the mushroom. So people took some intelligence kind of tests, and then they truffled. Might as well make up a verb when you have a moment. And then later in the evening, they took the tests again. Super clean research called open, you know, open source, so they knew. And it turned out, of the three kinds of intellectual activity they were looking at, two improved and one didn't. It's a very beautiful, clean research, and what's wonderful is it took about 3 hours to get the data. See, my friends in the hard science world, they do a study, and you've read some of them, you know, 12 subjects. How long did it take you to get the subjects? A year. What it cost? $80,000. And I say, well, I've got 5,000 to 10,000 subjects. And it costs awfully little, particularly at my salary. And we have a whole different way of doing science, which is called citizen science, which is you find out, you tell us, you help other people. We now have a few things where we say, don't use microdosing, as I say, for anxiety, color blindness, very few else. And that's where we're going. So that we are returning to the indigenous model, which is you work with people you know, and you work with people in your own life, and you find out how something works. And it's the nice thing about microdosing, if it doesn't work, you stop. If it's unpleasant in any way, you stop. And that's the end of it. So, I'll see some of you later, and for the rest of you, this is really an amazing event. Just amazing, and I'm so glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, that's our show. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be having more coming down the road. Thanks for your support, and please subscribe to Radio Earthrights.